Record?
Record.
I'm not familiar how to record on it yet.
Can you get high definition?
Well, it's HD, it says. It's got all the sports packages, NFL, Sunday Ticket, NBA, NHL, MLB.
How about the movie channel?
It's got HBO, it's got Cinemax, I believe. It's got
free movies, too.
And plus it has its own free movie channel.
There's 700 movies right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Five good ones. HBO and Showtime are in Spanish.
Mine are in English.
Oh, really?
HBO?
Yeah, it's...
I get the one through Scott. It's $50 a month.
Well, it seems like you
how much is it?
You have a number of different HBOs to pick
HBO
from, right?
16 if we sign up
now. The main one's in Spanish on mine.
Okay.
You get
okay, so there's about five HBO channels.
Yeah,
online.
Well, there's eight now. But anyway, you have to. You're very much internet susceptible. So if you've got a weak spot, it's hard to work it.
Well, if anybody's interested, talk to me after the meeting or with Ed. We got the first 10, and once 10 are up.
So what is the starting price if you sign up now?
300 pesos, whatever that works. At 1660, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, it will be the quality of your service will vary depending on the quality of your internet connection. If you're in one of those areas that's getting a weak internet connection, like I've visited places in the past that couldn't get more than 3 megabits a second, then it's going to directly cut into your experience. You might find yourself able to watch TV, but not able to watch TV and surf the internet at the same time.
Oh, yeah, that would be.
I've never had that.
What happens
problem?
If you have
yeah.
a VPN?
Well, Gary, I think you're above 5 megabits
a
second.
A
around 5.
Yeah, well, 5 to 10. A lot of people have 5 to 10. Probably just as many have 10 to 20, which means they have about 15. But there are a few people, few areas in town where you get 3 to 5. And if you're in one of those areas, then it will be, you'll have to alter the way you're using internet so that it doesn't affect your TV viewing. I mean, when you get up to above 5, it doesn't really feel that way. You'd have to really be pushing your internet connection to feel it.
That doesn't mean it's problem-free.
No. Yeah. Yeah, no, it doesn't mean that it's problem free. You are always at the mercy of the weakest link in your chain. It's just if you're
one little clue is when the screen comes up with the information about the channel you're watching, the chances are pretty good it'll come back on in a few seconds. If it comes up with a test pattern, forget it. You might as well shut it down.
Bob, did you see a Roku?
Yeah.
Yeah, it runs as a Roku channel, and it seems like the best experience is a Roku 3 or higher.
Which I have, but I have lousy internet service, so I don't know.
How lousy?
Well, I don't think I even get
well,
3.
But you're doing Netflix without... No, you're doing Amazon...
Netflix.
And so are you buffering? Is
not
that
at all, but my computer started buffering recently. It hasn't done that in years. I have two issues that I have.
Okay.
Share with you, I think the book is...
Well, I have turned on the recorder and I'm turning
so
on the chat room.
What's that?
If something goes down.
No, what has happened?
I don't know yet. But I'm here till August. You know.
Looking up your host name, cannot read it. Instead.
You can't do anything.
Ah, good. We're good. Okay. Chat room is up.
Yeah, we just do it online with emails. Oh, yeah.
And
Magic Jack, Skype, Telmax, Telcel. I'm connected.
Well, there's nothing going on. Does anybody live at Loma del Mar, and how's the internet there?
The internet is through the telephone service. Sir.
Through the telephone?
Yeah, but...
What kind of speeds do you get getting infinitum in Loma del Mar?
It's not real good. I haven't metered it lately, but...
It's typically not real good.
I've got 15 right now.
In Loma del Mar?
No, up on top of the hill.
Right, yeah. Loma del Mar, being a gated community, has underlying phone lines that are questionable. And I mean, if it rains, they get worse internet. If the wind blows, they get worse internet.
And that's the only option for internet up there?
Yeah. Yeah, and I've had a couple of different customers that pursued getting the higher speed. The Telmex is offering three different packages right now. There's a 389, which is supposed to be, it's called the 10 megabit.
3 to 5.
And it's actually 5 to 10. And then there's a 20 megabit, which is 10 to 20. And then there's an up to 100 megabit, which is $9.99. And in Loma del Mar, there are people that have tried to upgrade to the 10 to 20 and are getting the same results as 5 to 10. And so they just have dialed down their package. They, as long as we're talking about these packages, that is a cost savings to get the 389. If you can't get more than 8 megabits a second, then you might as well be on the 389, with one exception. If you pay the $5.99 price, you do get unlimited cell phone calls and unlimited national calls. Whereas if you pay the $3.89, you get, I think it's 200 minutes of cell calls and 100 national calls before they start charging you.
What's that mean?
Well,
what's the cell phone package?
Well, typically, traditionally, in the past, Telmex has charged you for calling a cell phone. And so what they started doing recently is they started giving you free cell phone calls with if you get one of these packages. And so if you get the cheapest package, you only get 200 minutes. And then after you've gone over 200 minutes, you start paying for cell phone calls. This is to call cell phones.
Yeah.
If you pay the $5.99 package, then all cell phone minutes are free. I mean, or they don't cost any more than a local call. Muchas gracias. Now we're ready to get started. I got the stream running. I got the chat room up. I got my coffee in front of me. This is the San Carlos Computer Club, and we are about to start talking about somewhat organized topics. But in our typical fashion, we're very unorganized.
Is that our legal disclaimer?
There we go, yeah. If anybody's disappointed with the organization and presentation of this podcast, it's because nobody has done any of that. This is all impromptu. Wow, we got a lot of people here. How many tables? We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 27 people. We got 5 external tables and 1 long table. This is a great group. Is my father here? Because he was walking up here. Well, we'll keep an eye out for him. He was walking. Mom was driving and was going to pick him up and take him back. So neither one of them are here. So
they're from Alaska?
Yeah. He didn't walk from Alaska.
Oh. I hope not, yeah.
He left yesterday.
Yeah.
One more option for Loma del Mar, which is XP Pros Wireless.
Oh, that's true. That's
I don't recommend it so much. You get about 3 megs if you're lucky.
Yeah, well, yeah, and I don't want to talk poorly about their service. But okay, Mike wants to. Let's just say that they're comparable. Telmex's service in Loma del Mar, Telmex's service and X-Pro's service. Any given day, one is better than the other.
Yeah.
In Loma del Mar, because of the way the phone lines are laid out in Loma del Mar.
Your other option would be your telephone and Wi-Fi your phone into your.
You're talking about a cell phone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hotspot off your phone.
So you use it, yeah, and use the internet off it.
That's what I'm doing with the telephone. But speaking of that, I ordered 2 dongles from your favorite Amazon in Mexico.
Okay.
$50. I said, this is cool.
Yeah.
Shipping charge, about double that. Maybe a little higher.
Double?
Double the $50 and a little higher. A little more than double.
Why is that?
Over $100
more. I didn't bother to ask. I just hit the link. Boom, that was steaming.
Now, are you sure you were on Amazon.com.mx?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I turned off my VPN.
Okay, but if you go to Amazon.com from this country,
no, I did Mexico.
Okay, yeah, because they are completely different sites.
Spanish, so, yeah.
Yeah, if it's all in Spanish, you're at the right spot. Yes, have not found a way to turn it into English.
I dongle away, and then at the end, I just hit it.
Well, I was surprised. You know, in the
States,
Amazon now, if you're in a large area, is delivering things like dongles and cables within 8 hours of purchase, right? And they're reasonably priced. And like, for example, an HDMI cable might be $8 to $10, right, including shipping. Well, if you got Prime, of course. So I ordered some HDMI cables. They're taking 2 weeks to get here. They don't have them for distribution here in Mexico, so they have to come from the United States. They're being sold by Amazon in Mexico, and they have not added extra shipping to it because they were part of a larger order. So there's no extra cost with these HDMI cables, except for their list price. That's what I'm paying for them. But instead of them being here in 8 hours or 2 days or 7 days, they're taking 2 weeks to get here because they don't exist in Mexico. So there's a caveat.
Probably made in Mexico.
Boy, wouldn't that be the... You're probably not wrong. They probably got exported to the United States, and now they're getting re-imported from the United States.
My guess is down the road they'll have more distribution centers rather than just Mexico City.
Well, yeah, and actually, what Paul said may be incorrect. They may have had these made in China because China is the biggest competitor for Mexico for those kinds of things. But if they were making them in Mexico, the Maquila program opened up a few years ago this ability to build for Mexico, and so we might see Amazon approaching some of these Maquilas to do stuff like that. So they're getting their product directly instead of having to get it from the United States. Everything about Amazon.com.Mexico has changed in the short period of time I've been following it. I think I started by telling you guys it was standard 7-day delivery. Well, that's changed. I think I started out by telling you it's all DHL. That's changed. Stuff is showing up by Paquetería Express now. It's showing up by FedEx. It's showing up by UPS and DHL. They have obviously cut all the deals now so that they can start doing competitive shipping. And that kind of leads me into the first topic I thought you guys might find interesting. I read an article on The Verge that says that Amazon is looking at becoming its own shipping business. They've actually already started in India, but Bloomberg got a hold of an internal document that lays out this plan for Amazon to be competing neck and neck with UPS and FedEx by the end of the year.
They're talking about drones even delivering packages.
Well, you know, they've had that idea going for a while.
Yeah.
But they... What they focused on in this respect is that first end, this international shipping end, where you've got areas in India that are similar to Mexico, where there's industrial parks where products are being built. And they're talking about instead of having UPS servicing or FedEx servicing these industrial parks, Amazon's going to have their own vehicles coming and going from those industrial parks. And so they'll be able to, the products that are being sold through Amazon are going to be able to be picked up by Amazon and brought to a main shipper. It may still be UPS or maybe FedEx. Hey, Dad made it. Hey, Pop. to save money on the final price of this product, if they're... Only Amazon products going out. Amazon will probably be offering those suppliers free shipping, at least till the next step in the journey.
Seth,
yeah.
On that Amazon Mexico page, it's all in Spanish. There's no way to change it over.
I haven't found a way to change it in English.
At the bottom, it gives all these countries.
It'll take you back to the U.S.
That's what it does.
Yep. Takes you back to the U.S.
Okay. And Scott, what if you try opening it in Google?
With the automatic translator?
Yeah.
I suspect it works. I mean, at least as well as the Spanish translations work for the English websites.
Opening it with Google Chrome.
Yeah.
I didn't try it with Chrome.
Well, you know, Chrome has an inline translator for web pages.
Okay.
And so I suspect it, at some amount it works.
I've done that.
Have you done that for Amazon.com.mx?
I didn't buy it then because the price was just too high.
But you were able to see details translated?
Most of details.
Yeah, and that's the kind of experience I would expect from a Chrome translated web page. Most of it's straightforward. And you do want to look, they'll list stuff that can come from the States, and it'll have a shipping price or in a tax price on it. I've also watched as prices have changed quickly. They've got it dialed in now as the peso has been changing. What they're offering you as a price is changing very quickly too. So you may go back tomorrow. You may see this great price today and go back tomorrow and find it's been adjusted.
Upward.
Yeah, well, that's the peso's going down, so the price is going up.
Won't that affect the Mexican customers?
I mean, sure, absolutely.
Something dramatic is going to happen soon.
With the peso?
No, with everything.
With everything, yeah.
Look at the stock market, yeah.
Well, if you're interested in any of the shipping topics, I'll just put this link on the website. I found it very interesting that maybe by the end of the year, your shipper will be Amazon versus UPS versus FedEx. And I can imagine that's going to happen. Like, if you take India as the example, and then they apply it to Mexico, they're using Amazon shipping in Mexico to get it to their next step. Well, if they're selling in Mexico, the next step is your door. So we might actually see Amazon trucks. I mean, maybe not in San Carlos, but in places like Guadalajara or Mexico City. And then they could guarantee like 8-hour deliveries
or
from
drones.
Their warehouses. Yeah, or drone. We'd probably see drones around here.
I don't see how that's going to work. Drones.
Drone. Well, I think it's a fantasy right now, but they definitely have the technology. It's just regulations and stuff like that they have to get through.
Packages falling.
The drones
out.
Would have to be able to avoid other drones.
Is that a new TV? It's like a claw machine. You're like, can I get it? I'm going out over the city to hunt for new products.
Pirating brought to a new level.
If that is the case, the skies will be dangerous.
New York City, they deliver drones.
They're
drones are?
No.
Oh, yeah. That's right. They've actually bought a couple of those grocery store services.
Wow.
I got a couple of things. First, does anybody have any updates on Netflix? Nobody's having problems using Netflix with the VPNs?
No.
No, everything seems to be working?
I had an interesting experience with CloudVision, though. I got an email from Telmex to download it, and I tried, downloaded it, and it said not available in the region. So I unplugged the router, put everything on Infinitum, and tried it again, and it still said not available.
Is this from the Roku?
No. I'm just trying to get it on my laptop.
On your laptop.
And my tablet.
Well, that's
couldn't get it.
That's odd. Going to Netflix in Mexico or in the United States. Oh, Claro Vision.
Not available in your region.
You might try a different web browser.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe there's, I guess I haven't explored that enough, but maybe they're using some like Flash or Silverlight or something like that, and unfortunately the error message is not intelligent and it's falling back on that error. I mean, I'm just guessing, I'm speculating, but it might. Yeah, I would try a different browser because I haven't seen that experience.
What is Claro internet based?
Claro Video is internet based. It's if you've got an Infinitum package, one of the three,
I got the middle one,
then you have free access to it for at least 12 months.
And you know what else? It did not say for 12 months. It just said free.
Yeah.
Like it's forever free.
Well, maybe something's changed recently. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's really the way Telmex does everything. It's like the conversation I had with the girl there, and she's like, well, what they've done in the past is they've rolled it over and continued to make it free. But she prefixed that with, I can't tell you what they're going to do 12 months from now, but I can tell you what they did before. And that's the way Telmex is. They never commit to anything in the future, which is probably a good thing for all of us because we want them to be flexible and nimble. If another telephone service came into town or another internet provider came into town, we would want them to be as competitive as possible. It'd be easier to stay a customer of theirs than it would be.
You told me 1 month free, so a year free is.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great example. And we used to have to sign for a year contract for internet. I don't know if you guys remember that. And if we wanted out of it, we would have to pay a fine to get out of it. We also had to buy our own equipment. And so Telmex has become much more nimble as we've gone into the future.
We can make calls to the rest for nothing, but they can't call us
for it. Right, yeah.
They have to be more competitive because of the different options.
That's right.
We had a problem yesterday in our computer clubs. We have a computer for the club. I mean, computer. Our art league computer was.
You have the club computer.
We have a club computer, and we wanted to get out online, and we had the password and everything, and had it installed, and it said local access only. Now it's an old computer. It's a Vista.
Well, what local access only means when you're looking at the network settings there in Windows, it means that it's connected to your local area network, but it can't find a route out to the internet.
So how do you fix that?
Well, it depends on what's causing that problem. Because in a perfect world, the problem isn't the computer's problem.
Oh, okay.
I mean, the problem is the link to the internet. And so what you would first do is you go check your router and see if you're able to, like a local area network implies that you have more than one computer connected. And that message, local area or local access only, is implying that, or you could infer that another computer right there, right beside it, you could talk between those two computers. If both those computers were healthy, neither one of them would be getting out on the internet. So what I'm getting at is you would go and check another computer on that network.
Yeah, I was able to get out on my iPad, but we couldn't get out on the club.
So there's definitely something going on with that computer. Now that could end up being some piece of malware, a virus, a broken thing in the system. You might try just running a cable to the computer. Was it Wi-Fi that it was connected?
It's Wi-Fi, yeah.
Yeah, so you just for troubleshooting, you might just run a cable to it, mm-hmm. and see if you have a different experience. Because then you could narrow it down to something about the Wi-Fi.
Else, I don't know. It's a Tekalite, so I don't know where the router would be.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so you wouldn't have that option. So it's connected to the Tekalite Wi-Fi spot there.
Right.
Okay, so in those circumstances, with the kind of Wi-Fi equipment that I've seen, it's possible all you need to do is reboot the router. And you could go to the office and ask them, could you just restart the router? And that may just clear up the problem.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Some of these old, and Tekalite would have to be replacing their routers regularly, which most places don't, so I'm making some assumptions. Most people don't replace their router, even if they get sent a router by, if it's working, why replace it?
Yeah.
It's just extra work and you're asking for problems. If it's one of these older routers, a very common problem is it works great, everybody that was connected to it before is still connected to it, but when you go to introduce a new device to connect to it, it has problems. Yeah. And so the remedy for that is to unplug the router and wait 10 seconds, plug it back in, wait for it to start up, and then try again. And that's a real simple thing to do to find out whether that's the problem or not.
Okay. I had trouble with Netflix, and I had trouble with something else. And it was interesting, you asked if we had trouble with it.
Yeah.
And
do you think
I just found out that my VPN is is inside my computer only and not in Roku.
Oh, so you...
And I don't know if anybody ever... I thought it was just automatic.
No. Yeah. And it actually, for you to... Wait, what are you using? Hide My Ass?
Yes.
So to use the Roku with Hide My Ass, you'd actually have to have a router that supports a VPN connection.
We do.
So if that router is connected to HMA, then the Roku would be connected to that router. I think you've had it working before. You've talked about having a router.
I don't know. I experience people... I have eyeball situations I don't understand.
Okay.
And
antiquation is the biggest issue.
What?
Antiquation.
That could be part of it, yes. Antiquation.
Okay. Well, Bob, maybe it's helpful to understand that your HMA account allows you to have an individual VPN in your computer, your phone, your tablet, as well as you can use the same service in a router that sits between equipment, like a smart TV or a Roku or an Apple TV box. Mm-hmm. And so you're probably taking advantage of both. Mm-hmm. You've got the software installed in your computer, so you could make an individual VPN connection from the computer. But then you also have the hardware, the mm-hmm. router, and your Roku connects to that. You could connect your tablet to it if you wanted to, or your smartphone to it.
Do you have a surge connector, a surge protector for your telephone?
For?
My house is like a boat. Things fall apart. You never know what's happened. One phone just went out. Quit working. And I think it probably was a surge.
Hmm. Well, you know, there are surge protector, line protectors for the phone.
Yes.
Yeah, and so...
Those little bitty guys?
Well, they've got... You find them on surge protectors for electricity or like the voltage regulators that they sell around here. They've got an in and out for the phone line. Right. Yeah, and so it's a completely different technology intended for surges coming through the phone line. Did you want to add something, Mike?
Hide My Ass, we have three or four items on it, but I've had to program each one of them into it.
Say that again?
The Hide My Ass.
Right, the Hide My Ass.
I had my computer first.
Okay.
And then I wanted on Kindle, and my wife wanted on hers, so I went to each of those machines and programmed it in.
Well, and you don't use a router, do you?
Well, if there's a router in that white thing I have from a Telmex, I do.
Well, yeah, you use that router, but Hide My Ass can be embedded in a secondary router, not in that router,
Okay, fine, okay,
but in a secondary router, and then you can use that secondary router as your...
But otherwise, you can load it into each, you just use your password and your username and just load it into each machine.
I use a DNS in my Telcel or Telmex router. I've accessed my Telmex router and plug my...
These DNS services, and I'm sorry, I'm not ready to give any specific information, but I did leave an article on the website all about these different ways to get to the United States. And these DNS services, which are different than routing, the DNS services actually look at the – if you set your DNS to a different address. So up front, it's a little complicated, but what – after that's set up, then when you ask for an address like Netflix, it goes to that DNS server and it gives you a new route that makes you look like you're going in the United States. And so once it's set up for your whole network.
Yeah.
And each one of your devices, and so you don't need extra equipment for them. It's just slightly more technical to set up in the first place on the router. On the individual computers, it's pretty straightforward. You just add a manual address.
I like Postbox for the reason that you can keep it independent of your computer.
Right.
And you're going to be shut off in another room, and I still got VPN service.
Yeah, and I've seen a DNS service where you're able to register for it through a web page, and it just immediately grabbed all the devices, including the smart TV, so that you could go out on, basically having the same effect as if you had a router that was maintaining a VPN. The only disadvantage I saw with it was that occasionally it would lose its registration and have to be re-registered.
Every once in a while I have to go back in and say update IP address. It takes 2 seconds, just hit a button and it updates.
Yeah, yeah, that's the only inconvenience I've seen with it.
The DNS is hide my ass, is that what?
Well, it's not quite as, I don't think.
It's not the same. What happens, these services monitor, a DNS is kind of like a phone book for the internet. We've had that kind of discussion before. When you ask for a name from the internet, like for example CNN.com, your computer actually needs a numeric address. It can't do anything with that. So it goes to your predefined DNS. And most people right out of the box are using a DNS provided by Telmex. They just automatically set to a Telmex DNS. It'd be like you went to Telmex and grabbed their phone book to look up phone numbers. The difference is the phone book has every number in the world available to it. Now, these DNS services, what you do is you manually change which DNS you're using. You choose to use a different phone book. That service is looking for your lookups. And when you hit services that they're monitoring, like Netflix or Hulu or Amazon or any of these services that are popular to spoof as though you're in the United States, then they send you back a different phone number or a different number for the service than you would typically get. That number runs through their service and pops you out the other side as though you're in the United States. This is a whole bunch of, I'm trying not to make it too technical, but in the end, none of that matters. All that's inside the box. I mean, for you, it's the same experience. For you, you're able to use these services as though you're in the United States. Probably the big difference between using a VPN and using one of these DNS services is you're reliant on the DNS service to be covering what matters to you. So you're hoping in this handful of things that they're monitoring is the video service you want to use, or is the banking institute that you want to use, or is the shopping institute you want to use. It's in their hands. So that would be a selling point if you were going to use the DNS services.
Into the computer? Is that what you're
saying? No, it's right. Not.
It's
actually built into the service out there on the internet. Right? If you get to Hulu, it's because your DNS service decided that Hulu was one of the ones they were going to cover. If you get to Amazon Prime for watching videos, it's because that DNS server out there is covering Amazon Prime. That's the difference. With a VPN, you're making a channel to the United States, and everything you do is as though you're in the United States. When you use a DNS service provider, you're hoping that in their bundle of what's provided is the service you want to go to.
So security, VPN versus the DNS, which is more secure?
There is security problems with both. I personally, with my experience and background, feel like a VPN is a much more secure way to do this. But there are nuances in both. I think that there is a real security problem with an unmonitored DNS service provider. Not so much. I think when they're selling you these services, they have an obligation to be as secure as possible. They do not need stories going around. Their business model is based on you feeling like using their service. So it's in their best interest to provide you with the most secure DNS results possible. Yeah, Jim?
Another plus for the DNS is it's faster. If you're suffering from a slow internet already, a VPN is going to slow you down a third or something like that when you activate it. The DNS doesn't slow you down at all.
Well, it slows you down only on those services you're using, because you're virtually using a VPN for those particular services. And so when you use those particular services, like HBO Go or Netflix, through the DNS provider, What they've done is they've rerouted your traffic to a server they control so that you look like you're in the United States, and that's virtually identical to a VPN. The difference is you don't maintain a VPN all the time. You're only using it in those instances. So the rest of your internet experience is fast. You don't have the overhead of always going across the VPN.
I want to know, does Hillary understand all this?
Bob, I appreciate the way you try and change Computer Club into a political discussion.
We see things differently.
She wasn't smart enough to hide her email server.
Scott, what does it cost? And can you put it in all your machines?
You can put it in all your machines, and the cost is competitive. I don't have any of this information at my fingertips, but we did have a discussion about it a few months ago, and on sccclub.org, I've got a link to a good article that compares and contrasts all these different services. So I would go look at that. I'd have to go look at that again because I don't have that information in my head.
I pay $5 a month for my Unitelli DNS service. And it's, like I said, I've incorporated it in my router, so all my devices that connect to it are hooked up to this DNS.
Going back to DNS security, there have been concerns. Some of the concerns, like a very popular open DNS to use is Google's DNSs.
Yeah.
And those numbers, they've made it very easy to remember. It's 8.8.8.8 and 8.8.4.4. Now, there is a privacy concern with using Google's DNS because you can imagine they're tracking all your lookups, right? And they can associate them with your Google account. And you don't have to go to Google for that to be happening if you're using Google as your DNS. Unitelli is keeping track of the DNS lookups. But you can imagine anybody providing you with a DNS in this day and age is tracking your DNS lookups. There's a security issue with DNS lookups because if a DNS gets hacked, you can ask for CNN.com and you can be sent the hacker's best website for spoofing CNN.com. Or even worse, you can ask for BankofAmerica.com and you get sent back exactly what should appear as BankAmerica.com to log in, and it's really a hacker's website collecting your login. So DNS security is a big deal. And so when you're picking one of these services, you want one that people have good reviews, they've got good security reviews. You don't want just on-the-fly service that's just appeared. You want one that's been in the market for a while and people say good things about it. Because DNS security is a big deal. With a VPN company, their whole angle is security. So right off the bat, if you pick something like Hide My Ass or Whytopia, I apologize, a strong VPN, there are a number of these services, their whole aspect is security. So right from the get-go, I'm not trying to sell you on one or the other. I'm just telling you where these come from. The DNS things come from, I want to use TV in another country. They want to have good security because they want you to use them. They don't want stories out there saying, well, I used this and I got hacked. But when you use a VPN, you're using a company whose aim is security. And so hopefully you don't find stories out there saying, oh, Whytopia has been doing a lousy job keeping me from getting hacked. Their whole job is to keep you from getting hacked, if you follow what I mean.
Would LastPass help somebody who has DNS?
They're not related.
But, well, I mean, wouldn't it help? Okay.
Yeah, they're just two separate entities, yeah, two separate technologies. Yeah, so there's that.
We beat that to death.
Yeah.
Back to Hillary.
Well, I have a question. People that have Google Mail, it only happens on my husband's computer. He doesn't have identical language. He'll have been in one email and he switches to the other, and right in the middle of reading one or writing one, It throws him out and puts him back in the previous email address.
Is this on Chrome?
Yes.
He might check and see if he's got a little Chrome icon in the lower left-hand corner. It might be re-signing him in automatically. Gosh, I forget what that's called. Does anybody remember what the desktop notifications? It's something like that. It's something like Chrome desktop notifications.
This will be when he's in his email. It'll be down on the left.
In fact, in his email, there's a setting. I'm going to have to write this down to check it out again. There should be an email setting about desktop notifications being on, and he should turn it off.
Turn it off. Okay.
Notifications. Because Chrome has the ability to be running in the background and give you notifications on your screen. You've just received a new email. The weather is such and such. You've got this appointment. And if it's on, I suspect it would be re-logging him in.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I have a question. I'm running Windows 7, and for a while now, they wanted me to upgrade to Windows 10. Most of the people that I've talked to that have upgraded said they wish they had enough. So I'm trying to get. I don't know whether to do it or not. What's your opinion?
I'm a big fan of Windows 10, and I feel like people that haven't had a good experience didn't have a computer person help them. The biggest problem that people have is they are upgrading an unhealthy computer to begin with. And so they run into problems. Things like their icons aren't existing, or they get a black screen at boot. They end up rolling it back. But the experience is faster, and I think it's a nicer experience than Windows 7. It's definitely a better upgrade than Windows 8 was. Is there anybody running Windows 10 that wishes they were still running Windows 7 at this table?
No, I'm happy with mine. No.
Yeah.
Mine's fine.
I went from Windows 7 to Windows 10, and I get a lot of cursor freezes. And I got to go down to the bottom and punch a bunch of buttons. I don't even know what sequence. I just start putting buttons, and pretty soon it unlocks.
Yeah, you might do some just basic disk maintenance on it because of the way that it uses virtual memory. It might be that there's just one of those standard file system glitches with the and checking and scanning for errors may resolve that issue.
To scan for errors.
Mm-hmm. And always make sure you have the latest updates. And was your computer is it a manufacturer computer like an HP?
Yeah, or? It is an HP.
Okay, so you might verify that, because here's the rub. When Microsoft says that Windows 10 runs on any computers running Windows 7, but HP says we haven't tested these computers to run Windows 10. And so I would go to HP, and Dell does the same thing, and Toshiba does the same thing. And so if you're having some goofy stuff like that, I would just verify that the manufacturer says it can run Windows 10. There are ways to solve that problem, because what it probably is a driver problem. If that's the case, if you go to HP or Toshiba or Dell and you look up your model and it says we have not tested this for Windows 10, you're probably dealing with a driver problem. What that's really saying is HP isn't going to provide you with a new driver. You got to go find a new driver somewhere else. You need to go find your video driver somewhere else. You got to go find your mouse driver somewhere else, or your trackpad driver, I mean. And I had experiences upgrading an ancient computer, which is like my war horse, an old Dell from 2007 to 10, and I'm still very happy to have gone to 10. Where it brought along a Windows 7 driver for sound that I had to go in and manually remove for sound to sort itself out and allow Microsoft to put its version of my sound driver in. Mm-hmm. Dell was not providing the driver. Microsoft had the driver. But Microsoft continued to use the Dell driver from the Windows... I realize now I'm saying Dell, and it was actually Toshiba. Exact same experience, but Toshiba. It was still using the Toshiba sound driver, In your Dell computer. What's that?
In your Dell computer.
No, in my Toshiba. I'm actually I realized halfway through this story I'm talking about the computer in front of me. It was still using the Toshiba sound driver. And when I pulled out the Toshiba sound driver, it went to the Microsoft sound driver, and all my sound issues went away. And so you're probably dealing with something like that.
Okay.
And so I would double check. If it does support 10, what you'll find is instead of a message saying we haven't tested this with 10, you'll find a message that'll be like, here's some troubleshooting 10 problems for your model. And inevitably, it'll have a list of drivers that you need to make sure are installed.
Here's another question. When I upgraded to 10, I still have my Windows 7 desktop, and I just have an icon down in the corner, you know, the left-hand corner. Mm-hmm. I click on that, and then my Windows 10 desktop comes up.
That's right.
That's the way it works.
That's the way it's supposed to work.
Okay.
Yeah, and if you want, if you're looking for the Windows 8 experience, I don't know who would be running Windows 7 then looking for Windows 8. But there is a check mark in the properties of the start menu that is labeled full screen. And that changes it to the Windows 8 experience, with the exception of in Windows 8 you'd get this full screen of tiles that you could sweep back mm-hmm. and forth through. And in 8.1 they added a circle with an arrow on it that you could hit, and it would bring up a list of applications. The difference with the full screen in 10 is you don't have the circle. You have that start button, the square, and you have the task bar always. And
you know,
so
in that respect, 10 is a lot better than 8.1 from that standpoint of that little button down in the corner.
Well, and I feel that way as well, but I do feel like that is because I don't have a touch screen. Okay. If I had a touch screen, I might feel differently. Yeah, and actually there is in the settings under notifications, in Windows 10, if you click the notifications button in the lower right hand taskbar button, there is an option in there called tablet mode. And tablet mode will take you in and out of that full screen experience as well. But to answer your question, I recommend going to 10 if you're running Windows 7. It's got lower system requirements. It's got higher performance. And what I recommend is make sure your computer is completely healthy. Run disk checks on it. Make sure that there's a significant amount of free disk space. Significant being like 6 to 10 gigs of free disk space. Run a virus scanner to make sure that you don't have any viruses. Run a malware scanner to make sure you don't have any malware in it. And then before you do the upgrade, because you don't want to get yourself into a state you can't get back, make sure you have at least the three backups we've discussed before. You want a system recovery backup from the manufacturer. HP or Dell or Toshiba will have provided a way for you to create a backup that would restore the computer back to out-of-the-box settings. Make sure that you have the Microsoft backup. The system image backup is sometimes... No, it's provided in Windows 7, and that can be put on an external hard drive. And then there's an incremental backup.
Maybe.
Well, it's the recovery, the HP recovery media, or the Toshiba recovery media that might be provided in Windows 7. And that would be putting on a stick or putting on DVDs, but it's provided by the manufacturer so that you can restore the computer back to the way it was when you first bought it. Then there's a Microsoft system image backup, which could restore your computer back to the way you have it. And then there's the incremental data backup that's part of that. You do the system image backup, and then you do the incremental backup. And with those three things in hand, you can feel comfortable to hit the upgrade button from Microsoft and go forward, knowing that in a worst-case scenario, you could hand me one of those, and I could get your computer back to where it was. Well, and then if you're completely successful with the Windows 10 upgrade and you just don't like it, Microsoft has provided a 30-day period of time where you can roll it back to where you started. So a healthy computer that successfully upgraded to 10, if you really don't like what you've done, you can roll it back within the first 30 days.
You say that it used to be that if you upgraded, you had to have a faster computer, or you had to have more memory. It used to be. So you're telling me that 10 takes less than 7.
Used to be makes me realize how long we've been doing a computer club. Because that was very true. When you were going from Windows 95 to Windows 98, you had to have a faster computer with more memory and more hard drive space. When you moved from Windows 98 to 2000, which nobody did because it really wasn't a consumer product, it wasn't ready, but you needed a more memory, faster computer with more disk space. When you moved to XP, you needed a computer with more memory, faster processor, and more disk space. And then Vista was the epitome of this. You had to have at least 2 gigabytes of memory. You had to have more disk space and a faster computer. Since the Vista fiasco, that has not been the case. When they released Windows 7, you could install it on a computer that could run Windows Vista and have a better experience than you were having with Vista. And mostly because your Vista computer couldn't run unless it had 2 to 3 gigabytes of memory. Windows 7 would run in they said 1 gig, but preferably 2 gigs. Since Windows 7 was the first, but Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.1, Windows 10, each one of these progressively required less from your computer. So you will have a better experience as far as performance running on Windows 10 than you are currently having running on Windows 7. What you're giving up are controls over whether you get the updates or not. Your much more complicated settings for sharing information with Microsoft.
With what?
With Windows 10 versus Windows 7. I mean, Windows 7 wasn't a cloud-based operating system, where Windows 10 really is. There is a lot of back and forth between Microsoft and your operating system, and you have to accept that if you want to run Windows 10. I personally think you have control over a lot of that stuff, the privacy stuff, if that's an issue, you have a control over that. What you don't have control over, the operating system sending operating information, things like application crashes, right? If you're running an application and it crashes, there's a very good chance that information has gotten bundled up and sent to Microsoft to help them improve the way Windows is running, and you can't opt out of that. Whereas in the past, with other applications, you can say, no, I don't want to contribute to that. Windows 10 does not give you that option. When it comes to stabilizing their platform, you are, by using Windows 10, you're participating in that program. What has turned people off is stuff like, what about sending my voice? What about sending what I type? If you don't want to use Cortana, you can turn that stuff off. If you don't know what Cortana is, it's Siri for Windows. So you can talk to your computer and have it spit back results to you. If you don't want to use that, you can turn all that stuff off. There's no reason for that to be shared with Microsoft.
Is that only on Windows 10 or is it not any previous?
Because Cortana never existed till Windows 10. Yeah, I mean, I think it existed on Windows phones under Windows 8, but it never existed on the PC until Windows 10. And so there's a whole slew of controls for privacy issues.
Is there an icon then that's on there for that usage?
Yeah, it's a circle that you normally find down on the taskbar.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's cloud operating, right?
It's probably best to think of it as a cloud operating system. It lives on your computer, but its health is intimate with this relationship with Microsoft.
And cloud is not very secure, correct?
Well, I think it would be wrong to associate that with Windows 10. It's probably better to associate it with troubleshooting, updates, refinements. You don't have any control over whether you get to share that with Microsoft or not. Microsoft's trying constantly to make their operating system better. And this is the other thing, is the path we're on right now with Windows 10 is this is the last operating system Microsoft makes, because it will be continually being improved and changed as your product goes into the future. When you buy a new Windows product, it'll have the latest release of this operating system. But we're done with things like going from 7 to 8. We're done with like XP to Vista. None of that will ever happen again. You'll just be running Windows, and every device that can run Windows will be running the latest iteration of Windows. It'll be installed in the form that works best for that device. So, like, if you don't have a webcam and a microphone, basically a microphone, Cortana wouldn't be installed and running by default, because it wouldn't make sense, because you can't talk to it, right? If you're following what I mean. If it's a tablet device, when it installs, it'll be installed with the full screen experience instead of the desktop experience, because it doesn't make sense to have a desktop on a tablet device. But it'll all be Windows in its latest iteration. The other thing, Microsoft has not come out and said this, but it only makes sense that Windows will probably be free from now on.
Be what? Free?
Free. Yeah, it'll probably just... we're not going to go back to a time where... the exception will be if you're building your own computer. If you're building your own computer, then there will be a product of Windows you can buy to put on your own computer or your own device. And then at that point, from that point on, every iteration that comes down will probably be free.
My fear is that, because I haven't converted yet, is that it's going to say, this product is so good and you're so dumb, you don't need a control panel or all programs list anymore.
Well, and that's Chrome. That's the Chrome OS. If you look at these Chromebooks, they really do take all that out of your hands, and they're more like, what is it you're trying to do? Because we can do documents through Google Docs, we can do spreadsheets through Google Spreadsheets. If you don't need specific utilities, if you're not doing specific activities, you're buying. And I'm sorry, I have to grab for things like Photoshop. Needs to be installed in a powerful computer to be taken advantage of. It slips my mind, but there's a video editing program, Premiere, Adobe Premiere. If you want to edit videos, well, you're not going to be doing it on a Chromebook. But if you're writing documents, spreadsheets, if you're doing emails and you're surfing web pages, if you're reading books and things like, and watching YouTube videos, all that can be done on a $200 laptop now called a Chromebook, and you don't have to get into Windows. And the latest thing that's happened, what I'm describing with Windows 10, what's happened with it, lives here, but it's intimate with Microsoft. That's been going on your Android devices since day one. If you have an Android tablet or an Android phone, that, and it has proven to be such a successful business model for Google, it's the reason Microsoft is moving in that direction. And it's become so successful as Android that they are ending Chrome in Google and they're folding it into Android. And it's a big shock to Google. You can tell, because they thought Android was a stopgap until they could roll out Chrome OS. And Android has been so successful with its business model that they are giving up on Chrome and folding it into Android just so they can just have one operating system they're supporting. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Give me 1 second, because Gary's had his hand up here for
me. I've had my first negative experience with Windows 10 yesterday when I was playing music on iTunes. I wanted to do something other than what was going on, so I clicked on it. Nothing happened. The tune was still playing, and I clicked on this, and that didn't change a thing. So, Control-Alt-Delete, and made iTunes stop. and then went back. We rebooted the computer, and everything's fine. But I have no idea what went on there.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't even speculate on that. I would just do systems maintenance, make sure that your hard drive's healthy. That's a real go-to. Is the easy things are check and see if the hard drive's healthy, check and see if you have any viruses. At the very worst, maybe there's a problem with iTunes and you should uninstall it and reinstall it.
With the Windows 10?
There shouldn't be any difference. There isn't a Windows 10 version of iTunes. But there hasn't been a Windows-specific version of iTunes since Windows XP. Windows Vista. Say again?
Type in CHKDSK.
Oh, yeah, that works.
Does it?
Yeah. If you're typing it in, though, you have to do it from an admin command prompt. You have to have administrative permissions to do it.
A little icon on the side of it.
Yeah, in Windows 10, the square window button in the lower left-hand corner, if you use the right mouse button, it'll bring up that menu of system stuff, and one of them is command prompt, and in brackets it says admin. It's actually two. It says command prompt, and then right underneath it says command prompt admin, and that's the one you would want to run if you were going to write the command. You could also find the hard drive in Explorer and click on it with the right mouse button and choose properties, and then there's a tools file tab, and under tools it has error checking, and you can start it that way too.
I had a question. I was trying to scan from my printer to my laptop, and the printer isn't supported anymore, and the laptop isn't supported anymore, and I couldn't do it. So I finally, put in a flash drive and did it that way.
Scanned it to the flash drive and then moved it over the computer.
Right, but then when it came on the computer, the screen that came up wouldn't let me do any editing on what I wanted to edit. wouldn't let me fix anything.
So you were able to look at the picture, but you weren't able to change anything.
Right, and it took me a long time, but I finally figured out a way to get it into Photoshop so that I could edit it.
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably what's going on, is that the computer is just pulling up some viewing app instead of some editing app.
And there was no way to edit it or no way to get it out of there. And I can't remember what I finally did, but there's no other way to do it. You just have to...
Well, you should pay attention to what you did to get it into an edit mode, because I can guarantee that most of the time all you want to do is look at what's the file. The default is probably the Windows Fax and Scan editor that's coming up, or not editor, I'm sorry, a viewer.
Viewer. It's just a viewer, right.
It's probably the Windows Fax and Scan viewer. From the viewer, if that's what you're using, there's a toolbar at the bottom, and there's one icon on there. I don't remember what it looks like, but if you click on it with the right mouse button, it gives you different ways to edit it, and it would have Photoshop listed right there.
Well, it didn't. I think I had to keep, searching to get a way to get it in.
But the other thing you could do is just that file by itself.
That's what I did. I saved the file into my pictures, and then from my pictures I got it into Photoshop.
Yeah, so that's what you could do, is just move it over to my pictures and deal with it.
Why have they made that sort of thing more difficult? Everything else on the iPad, they put in an editor where you can crop things and do other things with them. But
you're talking about a Windows computer.
I'm talking about a Windows computer. Yeah,
and so, do you know 10. What, Windows 10?
Mm-hmm.
So there
it didn't happen until Windows 10.
Yeah.
Before, I used to be able to scan right to the computer.
Windows 10 has a new app called Photos.
Yeah.
And so it brings it up in that first instead of Photoshop. that's what you could do, is you could, in Windows 10, you could go to the picture or any picture, and you could click with the right mouse button, and you'll find an option to open with. If you go, that's submenu, and it shows a list of things that will open it. But at the bottom of the menu, it says other. I think that's right. In fact, I'm trying to bring it up as we're talking so I can say the specific instructions here. Let me get a picture in front of me so that we're working on the same idea. So with the right mouse button, I've clicked on a picture. and I'm waiting because it's a net recording and doing all this other stuff. Come on, give me the menu. There it is. And in Windows 10, about halfway down that menu that comes up is an option that says Open With, and then a side menu pops up and it lists a number of things that can be open with the. Now the thing is, if you pick one of those, it's going to open with that one time. But if you want that kind of file to always open in something different, for example, Photoshop, then go down to the bottom and it says, it's not other, it says choose another application or another app. And if you click on that, and in my experience, this window has taken a long time to come up. At this point, it didn't take a long time. But I've had experiences where it took forever for this thing to come up. When it finally comes up, it will have a list of the applications that you could use, and Photoshop should be listed there. And you can highlight that and put a check mark in, always use this app to open. In this case, I'm looking at a GIF. So my check mark would be, always open this, use this app to open .gif files. When you're looking, it's going to be a GIF or a JPEG or a TIFF file, and so you'll see that. And it will change what the default app is for that app. So then from that point on, when you're dealing with the same kind of file, if you double-clicked on it, it would open up into Photoshop.
Can't you also do that in the control panel?
You can, yes. Yeah, in the control panels, there is a set default programs. And
Auto-connect. I forget what it's called.
What is it?
Screens that used to come up don't always come up anymore.
Exact
same problem.
Default programs. Where are they? Go into settings. Default. Come on. Exists. And what the new default in control panels does is it lists all the. Makes a list of all the programs you have. You can the program, and then to the right, it options, whereas which files to open programs. The options is use program as the for all circumstances. That's not the language, and I can't tell you the language because mine's taken forever. I would never use this netbook as an example of a hyper. don't experience is the experience you're.
It has one for video, and it also has.
Yeah, it does.
Yesterday.
Let me see here. In the control panels, for default programs. This sure looks like the right. Default under settings, under system. Come on, default apps, open up. Like, your battery's not going to make it through Computer Club if you do more than you're doing. Pile you down. Well, it'll be in front of me in a moment. But default apps, I think that's where it is. And it'll list out all the programs you have installed. Ah, there we go. So it lists out, like, for example, I've got a media player program, the VLC Media Player.
That's good.
And, boy, it sure does not want to do this much work while I'm doing all this other stuff. So we'll wait for that. Come on.
Is there any way, when you have photos on your iPad, say, to make them all smaller at the same time, or do you have to do them all individually?
You would need to look for an app that could do that. I don't know of anything built into the iPad where you could multi-select and change size. Now, there might be a trick there. I've never tried this on an iPad. This used to work on a Windows computer. I'm sure they've got a multi-select for sending through email. And when you send through email, one of the prompts that you typically get with images is, do you want to send the original image or do you want to make it a smaller size?
Oh, okay.
And so you could send yourself an email of that multi-selected. Yeah, and it would change it to a smaller size. And the fact that you can do that means a function's in there that does it.
but you can't. I would hope it any other way.
Yeah, I would hope that Apple does have something like that easily available. I've never used it. I know for a fact Microsoft never took advantage of making that a function in Windows. It was that function existed, but it was only accessible through the email function when you're doing images. Yeah. Gary.
Quick side question. I got to take some at the airport. Is there a market down here for used iPad 16 gig, used 5C iPhones, that kind of thing?
Oh, I would suspect so. Yeah. I mean, I don't know exactly where to point you, but if you just started letting people know you got stuff to sell, I'm sure people would be buying it. Yeah. Yeah. Beva San Carlos and mentioning it here and yeah.
Is there a market to buy printer scanners?
To buy printers or scanners? That's a tough one. When you can get printers for $100, it's hard. Buy a used
printer for all
probably the best answer I could give you, Bob, is I wouldn't recommend buying a used printer. I just wouldn't. If somebody asked me if it made sense to buy a used printer, I'd say no. Cause
are they even fixed?
How old is your printer, Bob?
Most of the time, they're not. Most of the time, they're fixable. But by the time you're done with the repair, you might as well have bought a new one.
It's almost cheaper to buy a printer than it is to buy two cartridges.
Well, you know, that was so true for so long.
Not anymore.
Yeah, that the manufacturers stopped including so much ink with them. Right, so now you got these primer cartridges that are good for, I don't know, 40 pages,
right.
And then you still got to go out and buy ink because in the end they're selling ink, they're not selling printers.
Let me tell you one thing I ran across buying a Mexican printer at Walmart is that you cannot go to the States and buy the cartridges. They do not; they're only made for Mexican or certain country.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
isn't that just HP?
HP, that's selling, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't think that's set in stone. That's more just availability. That printer is much more available in Mexico, so they make the ink available in Mexico. But it's not, I mean, it's because of the markets they're sold in. I don't think it's, like you can find HP ink, but you'd have to special order it in the United States. You couldn't just go to Walmart and expect them
Office
to have the
Depot,
ink.
Staples,
Yeah.
Best Buy.
Well, you can get there's a place in town right across from the electric company, electric offices that refills them, and they're very careful.
Hey, you know, on the topic of refills, a while back Linda introduced us to this printer that's being sold with 3 years of ink. It's like a $350 printer that comes with 3 years worth of ink. And we figured out the cartridge prices and we figured it out to be I think we figured it out to be something like $1,000 worth of ink in a $350 printer.
Where'd you buy that at?
Well, that's what I was going to say. I just saw it at Sam's Club in Wymas.
That was Epson.
It's an Epson.
Yeah.
That's right. Now, the caveat with an Epson printer is the printhead is built into it. And the problem with built-in printheads is that if they're neglected, they'll dry up, and it's a painful experience trying to get them to work again.
Right.
And so for years, I've never recommended an Epson printer for our climate and situation because I have customers that leave for 6 months, and they leave it sitting in a storage room. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, that's an amazing deal. The three.
But you know what I do is put a refrigerator. I put the printhead in my Canon. I put my printhead in the refrigerator while I leave.
Well, and you have the advantage of doing that with certain model Canons and most HPs. When you have a problem with a printhead with an HP, you just toss it in the trash, you buy another cartridge of ink, and you've got a brand new printhead. This is not that feature. This is a reservoir of ink that's replaced with squirt bottles of ink. You're literally changing your own ink, and they sell you a 3-year supply of squirt bottles.
Well, when it comes to the Epson, if they do freeze up like that, is there any
There isn't an easy system for it. Cleaning those printheads is very painful, and it includes things like using syringes of cleaning fluid, pulling the assembly out, attaching hoses to the assembly so you can squirt through it. The idea of the Epson printer is that it's getting used regularly so that it doesn't dry out. And that's why it makes it a bad choice for this environment.
If it was left for 2 months, would it have dried out?
It's possible, yeah.
Oh, in fact, I took in two brand new sealed cartridges for the HP. I took them back because they were 6 months old. And he says, we give you a 3 month guarantee. Mm-hmm. And they were totally dry.
And those were sealed?
Those were sealed.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Did you get your money back?
No. He says they're guaranteed for 3 months.
You know, Scott, I have an older Epson printer that I've had here for about 6-7 years. It takes cartridges like that are numbered 69. And I've never had a problem with it ever doing what you're talking about.
Yeah. Do you live here? Gary, do you live here full time? I can't remember.
No.
No. So how long will it sit without use?
Probably 6 months.
Well, that's really impressive. That's one of the few stories like that.
$30.
That's what
I bought at Target.
Epson. Yeah.
That's an old
one. And it's an Epson?
Every summer, and it's...
Yeah.
Well, it's the cartridges.
Yeah.
Yeah, the individual cartridges is the only problem that I don't
have. I don't have to refill.
That is, I mean, that's really the only problem I've seen with Epson printers down here is given the environment that they're left in and how frequently they get used, if they dry out. They dry out in a printhead that can't easily be serviced or changed.
Well, maybe it's a difference between the older printers and the newer ones, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I started noticing the problem about the time period you're talking about. Yeah. So I think you're...
This one we bought one for my mother-in-law. It was fairly cheap printer, but it has to be used all the time.
I have to have somebody pick it up or I bring it back.
Yeah.
Because, if you go to Sam's Club... I can't remember what the lower number is, but it's not 69. It's about that, slightly. Hmm.
I walked into Office Depot, and I saw a $34 printer.
People are leaving, and I didn't get through all my topics.
A printer scanner, but it had the very narrow little...
Ink cartridges,
yeah. And I wondered if those things could be refilled.
Those can probably be refilled without too much concern, because they don't have print heads on them. What they need to do though, they do have a chip inside them that the manufacturer puts in there to determine whether they're empty, and that chip has to be reprogrammed.
Salesman said they couldn't be refilled.
I'm going to talk to my husband.
Yeah.
But I don't know what he knew.
You know what? I don't give advice to refill cartridges. I just don't. That's my party line. I do not support people refilling. You can do what you want. You can save a buck where you want. I personally, and I don't recommend my customers, to deal with refilling cartridges no matter how good a service they have. And the exception for me is third-party cartridges. Like, you can go to Staples and buy, like, a Staples cartridge, or at least you used to be able to do something like that. I feel comfortable using that. There's online services that fill their own cartridges and send them off to you. I feel pretty comfortable. But the guy in the shop down the road, I wouldn't trust myself to refill them. I don't trust him to refill them. And my reasoning behind it is always the same. One bad cartridge, and you've lost the printer, and you've created more headaches for yourself than it's worth. I'm the kind of person, when I sit down in front of the printer, I want it to print.
Yeah.
Yes, Pop?
I have 4 Costco refills that would never work. Anyone.
Yeah. I remember that experience.
I didn't figure that out. Before. I mean, I didn't try it. I just kept getting refilled. And then when I used it, They didn't work.
Yeah. I like this $350 Epson with 3 years of ink. At that price, I would be willing to risk the climate.
You're not here in the summer either, right?
Right, right. And my printer in my home office seldom gets used. I would still risk it for that price.
You could leave it with Sony.
Yeah, okay. But for me, I'd probably be ready to, like, do the maintenance on the printhead because I got 3 years of ink invested in it.
Is that printer scanner and all combined?
Oh, I want to say yes. I believe it is an all-in-one. The one that's sitting at Sam's Club right now, it seems to me it was an all-in-one.
My Canon has a self.
Sure, and they're being sold in the U.S. as well, same model.
A couple people said they did, but then they got tired of waiting.
My Canon has a self-cleaning function.
Not a big deal.
Well, they all have self-cleaning functions, yeah. And the Epson has a self-cleaning function, but the notorious problem is when it doesn't work, when that head jams up, the self-cleaner is not cleaning it.
What happens if you buy one of those, though, and little bottles of don't last 3 years. Do they replenish?
Well, no, I mean, the 3 years is an estimate. It's a guesstimate based on typical printer use. So, like, if you look at the documentation, I don't have the numbers, but the documentation is based on how many pages are print daily in a typical situation. Yeah. I think the significant number for me when I calculated how many cartridges, how many refills that it equated to.
It's like jacking the price on the ink, too. At least that's on my side.
You know, I think the math I used was $50 for ink jet replacements for black and white. I figured that was a safe number. It's a little higher than some and a little lower than others. And they said they give you the amount of ink, the equivalent of 20 refills.
Wow.
So to me, that comes out at $1,000,
yeah.
Right? So for less than half $1,000, plus the printer. So I think that's a great deal.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Were you addressing problems with Windows 10 and the all-in-one printers?
Not specifically.
Oh, okay.
But you know, one of the things that we haven't talked about is Windows 10 has two printing systems in it. It has the traditional desktop printing system, and then it has the Windows 10 app system. And when I've had problems, I've found there to be a conflict between the two. And the conflict is because of old printer drivers. You have an old printer driver installed from the manufacturer.
Right. Well, I was going to address that for the group here.
Yeah.
Because I went through a lot of problems. My scanner stopped working.
Yep.
Different components stopped working. And I went into Google, and there's some technical stuff which you can follow, which when you do that, it still didn't work. The real key to everything is that you got to go into your Windows system and not enable. What do you call it? What's the opposite of enable? Disable?
Disable, yeah.
Disable the automatic upgrades. And then it worked perfectly.
And for the printer.
And then it worked? You disabled the automatic upgrade?
Right, for the printer.
Are we talking about Windows 10?
Yes, Windows 10. Have an HP all-in-one 8600.
Yeah, because that's interesting because all of a sudden I tried to clean my printer heads.
You must not be talking about the Windows updates.
I'm talking about the Windows 10 update.
Because you can't disable Windows 10 updates.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of the key differences of Windows 10.
Then it has to be the HP software update.
Something
like
that.
That's what it is, because Windows, you have to download the Windows 10 update for that printer. When you do, you then have to disable your automatic upgrades. Otherwise, it goes back to where it was.
Okay, maybe a better way to put this would be remove all your HP software for that printer. Check that printer on HP to see if it's got Windows 10 software. If it doesn't have Windows 10 software, then only install it using the Windows drivers.
Well, actually, because I'm not that savvy, I'm going to go back to it. I had to go into certain areas. The problem was the WMI or WIA driver for the printer. I forgot what the, it actually means.
Yeah, okay.
From Google, they told me where to go and enable and disable all of that.
Right.
Did not work. After I disabled automatic downloads for...
You know, I'd like to see what you found.
Yeah, you attack it. I had to stop the automatic downloads because once it downloads, it doesn't download the fix for the Windows 10.
See, I'm trying to figure out why that would work, and one of the reasons that would work would be because HP doesn't have software for that printer in Windows 10.
But they do, because I was able to download it. Not software.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
They have the fix.
In Windows.
You have to have the driver, but you also have to remove the other driver.
Right.
In other words, you had to remove the old driver for, I think I have Windows 8.
Like the story I was telling about the sound driver.
Right, exactly.
When I updated the computer, it left the old driver, and I had sound problems. When I went in and manually removed the Toshiba sound driver, it grabbed the Windows driver, and everything's been fine.
Okay, I had to do that, but it still didn't work until I disabled the automatic updates for that item.
No, the HP software.
I can print and scan, but I cannot run a test, clean the printer. I can't do any of that at once. It says it doesn't.
And that's the reason, because I had different problems. First I had that problem, then I couldn't scan, and I went through everything. I reinstalled the software.
So, yeah.
I was just reinstalling the problem.
Okay.
So how do you do that? You go to, how would I do that?
Go to Google. Yeah. First go to Google and just spell out what your problem is. Okay. They're then going to send you, there's guys out there that will send you into certain parts of the program where you enable or disable certain things.
Okay.
After that's done, the important thing, because this I had to find out on my own because it didn't work, is that you then have to disable the automatic update for that particular printer.
Because it would take you back to what it was.
Just roll it back.
Where it goes. And by the way, it gives you a different problem. She had one problem, I had another, and I had a different one before that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Well, great. Thank you for that. And I'm going to close out this computer club. There's very few of us left behind. I guess everybody's got something else to do than stay here with me. But it was amazing to have 27 people show up and five other tables full of people. I'm Scott Stimson, and this has been the San Carlos Computer Club. And if you're interested in meetings like this virtually, you could go to our website at sccclub.org. And listen to any of our previous meetings. This will be posted there shortly this week, hopefully today. It depends on what I got going on. We meet every Tuesday from 9:15 to 10:15 in Tequila's. If you're in San Carlos, you ought to stop by Tequila's. Do it on a Tuesday so you can stay for the meeting. Come for breakfast and stay for the meeting. If you're looking for computer help, well, that's what I've got, a computer shop. It's internationalcs.net. We're International Computer Solutions, and you can reach me at scott@internationalcs.net. It's been a great time. Can't wait to talk to you next week. Good topics. You guys have a good week. Tech on. I lost my connection. When did that happen? How long have I been without a connection?